Parshas Chukas, of course, opens up with the famous words Zos Chukas HaTorah, describing the mitzvah of Parah Aduma. The Torah introduces the mitzvah with the words, this is the chukah, this is the law of the Torah itself. It's one other place in Chumash where this phrase appears, and that's in a few weeks when we learn Parshas Matos, when we talk about the parsha of Giulei Nochrim, the parsha of kashering various different vessels. There too, the Torah introduces this very essential aspect of halacha with the word Zos Chukas HaTorah. Rosh Shira of Moshe Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik V'Kodel Shel Livracha, calls our attention to the fact that on the surface, the phrase seems to speak to some greater truth that goes beyond these specific parshios. The Torah could have just said, Zos Chukas Parah Aduma, or Zos Chukas Giulei Nochrim. Zos Chukas HaTorah sounds like it's talking about something of universal import, something that touches on something essential about the entire Torah. What is it about these two parshios, which contains a message which is universal, which transcends these specific halachos, and speaks to the ethos of Torah as a whole? In Parshas Matos and the Parsha of Giulei Nochrim of Moshe Zatzal suggests the following interpretation. Giulei Nochrim teaches us, the Parsha of Kashering Vessels teaches us, that even a vessel which has been defiled, which has been rendered treif, which on the surface one would think is beyond repair, nonetheless can be subjected to a kashering process, to a process of purging, and that which was formerly unusable and seemed to be beyond human reach can be brought back, reused once again, and rehabilitated. Says Rav Moshe, that's a fundamental concept that applies to Torah b'chlal, to Torah in its entirety. We should never give up hope. A neshama, which is sullied and dirtied and subjected to all kinds of impurities, nonetheless, through tshuva, through sometimes difficult tshuva, can be cleansed, can be restored, and can be brought back to its former glory. Ultimately, Zos Chukas HaTorah, both the parsha of Giulei Nochrim and the parsha of Parah Aduma, tells us that nothing and no one is beyond hope and is beyond rehabilitation. We have a very, very special evening this evening here in the Lower East Side. As Rabbi Avraham Yitzchak Rubin mentioned to me a few moments before the shir, this is a day that he's been waiting for years and years and years. It's a very special day in the history of the East Side when we're able to welcome Harav Hagaon Rav Yisrael Reisman, Shlita, Rav and Agudas Yisrael of Madison and Rosh Hashivan Tar Vadas to speak here in Bialystok Shul here in the Lower East Side. I think it's fair to say that much of Rav Reisman's career is dedicated to this proposition, to this idea that nothing is beyond hope, nothing can't be rehabilitated, and nothing can't be brought to the masses in a way in which makes it palatable. The laws of Ribbis, some of the most difficult halachas that are out there in Shulchan Aruch, can be presented in a way in which a layman can understand them. Navi, that forgotten subject from high school, which of course no one would ever go to a shir in Navi, one can present a shir in Navi for 1,000 people, week after week after week. Hachnosis Orchim, Shiduchim, in various different contexts, Rav Reisman is involved in the community scene, and his subject for tonight, dealing with the trials and tribulations of a difficult world, will shine a Torah perspective on how to take the difficult times in life, the times that may seem to be beyond repair, and yet be able to rehabilitate them through the cleansing power of Torah itself. It's a tremendous kavod for us to be able to call upon Harav Yisrael Reisman.
I want first to thank the Morad Asra, who always welcomes me here warmly, and especially for your very kind words this evening. I'd like to thank Rav David Zitzer and Rav Avraham Yitzhak Rubin, who arranged my coming here tonight. It feels good to be wanted. For me, it's an incredible thing to be standing in this Makom Kadosh, in this holy Beis Medrash. My mother is an Eastsider. My grandparents lived here on the corner of Grand and Lewis. And for about a decade, when I used to come for Shabbosais, my Makom Kavua was there around the pillar. Those of you who remember, it was very lively Friday night in the corner in the back. And it still is. And I remember Rav Yitzchak Singer, Zeche Tzadik Levracha, his elegant and eloquent orality from this podium. It's a tremendous chus for me to be here, something I never dreamt I'd have the opportunity to do. And thank you for coming, and I hope, pray, that the few words I have an opportunity to say here this evening will connect and will resonate with you. Ata gibor lo'olam Hashem mechayim esim ata rav lehoshia. The first three brachos of Shmoneh Esrei, as we know, correspond to the three avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And not only do they correspond to the individuals, but they correspond to the midos of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, so that Avraham's midah is chesed, and the very first bracha of Shmoneh Esrei is the bracha of chesed, is the bracha that talks about the Keel, HaGodel, HaGiba, VaHaNeira, who's Goymel Chasadim Taibim, he's Kainei HaKael. That's the first bracha, it corresponds to chesed, and we could see that. The second bracha, Atah Gibor, corresponds to Yitzchak's Midah of Gevura. The Midah of Gevura is Midas Hadin, is the Midah of God's strict justice in this world. And there's a problem. Because if the second Midah is Atah Gibor Lo'olam Hashem, if it talks about HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midah of strict justice in this world, why is it all about Mechaye Meisim Atah, about Tchias HaMeisim? Tchias HaMeisim is the single greatest act of kindness that could ever take place. The ultimate chesed is to be Mechaye Meisim. And certainly God's Tchias HaMeisim, which is an eternal Tchias HaMeisim. The Atah Gibor Lo'olam Hashem, the reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Midah of Givura, of Din, followed by Mechaye Meisim Atah Rav Lo'ishia, seems to be out of sequence. And certainly the Siyum HaBracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Mechaye HaMeisim, seems to point at Tchias HaMeisim being the ultimate Givuras Hashem. And that seems to be problematic. I'd like this evening to suggest an answer. But before I do, I'd like to digress. HaKadosh Baruch Hu compares his relationship with the Jewish people to that of a husband and wife, Yosis Olayich Elekoyich Kim Sais Chosan Alkala Ve'erastich Li Li'ayla. It's a relationship which is compared to a relationship of chasan v'kala. And I'd like to digress for a few minutes, share with you a thought on that topic, and see how we can learn from that to our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Jews have an expression which we often hear, which we often use when celebrating Sheva Brachis or a wedding. We have an expression, we wish the Chasan and Kala that their zivug, their match, should be Oyla Yafe. I'm not exactly sure how to translate that literally. The match should be Oyla Yafe, it should go up in a fine way. Going up, I suppose, meaning should be raised in a fine way. What exactly does it mean for a zivug to be Oyla Yafe? My Rebbe, Rav Pamzeit, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, used to say a vart and I'll try to give it over as best I can. In the beginning of Parshas Korach, Vayikach Korach, the first Rashi is a very unusual one. And Vayikach Korach, the first Rashi, says, Parsha Zu, Yofa Nidreshes B'Medrash Tanchuma, period. This Parsha is explained in a fine way in the Medrash. Now, I suppose you've all looked into Rashi. We've read Rashi in all the Parshas of the Torah. It is not Rashi's style, first of all, to give us citations to look elsewhere. Rashi never says, go look there, go look somewhere. He says it occasionally, but not as a complete Rashi. And secondly, Rashi's style is pshat, to tell us pshat in a pasuk. And here Rashi begins Korach by telling us, Yofa Nidreshes B'Medrash Tanchuma. So Rav Palm said the following word. I'm not sure if he quoted it from an earlier source, but this is the idea that he shared with us. In studying the Torah, we know that there's Pshat and there's Drush. Pshat is the simple meaning of a pasuk, of a parsha, pshat. Drush is not the simple meaning. It's the drusha, the deeper meaning. Now you know that very often in the Torah, the pshat and the drush are opposites. Pshat and drush often don't go together, for example. Parshas Vayigash, Yehuda says to Parai, Ki kamaycha, rather Yehuda says to Yosef, who he still doesn't recognize as his brother. Yehuda says to Yosef, Ki kamaycha kefara. What does he mean? Pshat, you're great, just like Parai is great. It's a compliment. Drush, Ki kamaycha kefara. If you don't let Binyamin go, I'll kill you together with Parai. So that the pshat is a compliment, the drush is a threat. Now those are opposites. A compliment and a threat are opposite ideas. But that's pshat and that's drush. They don't necessarily go together. Says Rashi, when you study Parshas Korach, don't think to learn pshat, that Korach was this diabolical, evil individual who set out to undermine Moshe. The pshat is wrong. You can't learn Korach with pshat. Yofa nidreshes. You have to go with the drush. Korach was a great man. He was a man whose visions bordered on prophecy. And nevertheless, he was misled. And he misled Klal Yisrael. So that said, Rav Palm, Yofa Nidreshes means it's Yofa, it's fine. Pshat and Drush come together here. The Pshat has to go with the Drush. Because the Pshat, as it would seem to be, is totally incorrect. So that Yofa means it's fine when the Pshat and the Drush fit together. What does this have to do with the Chasen and the Kala? I think all married men know that men and women tend to speak different languages. God wired men differently and women differently. Women talk about feelings, talk about hergish, talk about emotion. Men talk about practical things. I spent 11 summers in Camp Benos. The last night of camp, before everyone went home, there would be girls crying all over the camp. They won't see each other for 10 months, weeping, literally. Now I have to tell you, I spent all my boyhood years in boys' camps. You remember a boy crying the night before camp is over? Having barbecues and celebrating. Men and women are wired differently. Women talk about feelings. Men tend to talk about practical things, about what to do, how to celebrate, how to enjoy, how to fix. For a young couple, it's a challenge. A young man gets married, and he has to learn that the pshat in what his wife says does not always fit the drush. So that if he comes home at the end of the day, and his wife is in a sad mood, and she complains that she worked on the computer all day, and it crashed, she lost all her work. What does a man respond? A man says something foolish like, "Oh, you should have backed it up." And the wife immediately starts to sob and say, "You're not listening to me." All married men have had this experience. You're sitting with your wife, paying your full attention, and suddenly you say something and she says to you, "You're not listening to me." And a man doesn't know what in the world she's talking about. So I'm going to do the ladies a favor and explain to the men what's going on. At the end of a day, if a woman worked hard and the computer crashed and she went to talk to another woman and say, "I worked hard all day, my computer crashed," what would her friend say? "You must have felt terrible." Because when a woman says, "My computer crashed," she's talking about feelings. She's talking about the fact that she had a difficult day. The right answer is, "You must feel terrible. I feel bad. I feel with you. I empathize." But we men, we don't do that. I recently had a young man who had been in my shir a number of years ago in the yeshiva, and is now in his mid-30s. And getting married. So he came to my home for a meal together with his kala. And we were talking about marriage and about the challenges of marriage. And at one point, before they were leaving, I spoke about the topic I'm addressing here. And I mentioned to the kala, while her chassan was out of the room, that men and women respond differently to different ideas. And I gave her an example. I said, if your husband were to come home at the end of the day and were to say, you were to say to him, "I'm sorry, I burnt supper. I worked hard on a delicious supper and it burnt." What do you think your husband would answer? Now, all men don't have to speak, just think it. So I told her, she says, "What would he say?" I said, "He would say, 'Oh, that's nothing. We could go out to eat.'" And she said, "No, he would never say that." I said, "You want to bet?" A few minutes later, he came back and I say to him, "Yaakov, it's the end of a long day. You come home. Your wife tells you she worked hard on a delicious supper, but it burnt. What would you answer?" So the big smile, he says, "Oh, that doesn't matter. Let's go out to eat. I like this in this restaurant anyway." And she says to him, "No!" And he stands there absolutely confused. What did he say wrong? You see, in a man's mind, he's being noble because his wife burns supper. He's not getting upset. He's not getting angry. He's saying it doesn't matter. Now, his wife knows he's not going to get angry because she burnt supper. But she's saying, "I feel terrible. I worked hard all day, and it all burnt. I feel awful." And what is the chacham answering? "Oh, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. We can go out to eat anyway. Who cares?" That's the wrong answer. Generally, men spend shana rishayna trying to get it straight, and the next 25 years trying to straighten out their behavior. The zivuk should be oyle yafe, said Rav Pam. is a bracha that the pshat and the drush of the spoken word should fit. That somehow the challenge of communicating in marriage, which has to do with the recognition that men and women speak fundamentally different languages, and when a woman says to you, you're not listening, the fact that you could repeat every word is not an answer. Because the statement was a statement of feeling, and your response is to a response of fact. This is a fundamental challenge in marriage. It tests the communication skills of a couple. And said Rav Palm, Parsha Zu Yofeh Nidreshes. The zivik should be Oyla Yofeh. Yofeh is when the pshat fits with the drush, where the spoken word and the deeper meaning fit well together. And to a great degree, that's the challenge of the communication of a couple, to be able to understand what the other one means. And so, that's my 5 minutes of Shalom Bayis for the evening. And we turn back to our relationship with the Rabbi Nishalayla. A fundamental challenge in understanding our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to understand that we speak different languages. That a human being with his small mind and his narrow eyesight sees a very small, narrow world. Sees a physical world, a small piece of the physical world, a small section of time in a physical world that's not God's language. The Rabbeinu Shel Olam's language regarding the human being's existence in Olam Hazeh is one. It's that a human being in this world should be zeicha to the goodness of Olam Haba, the goodness of Tchias HaMesim, the goodness of the Oyer HaGonus, the hidden light, the great Leviasa, the Shar HaBar, the gifts of Asid Lavai. When we talk about Midas HaDin in this world with our narrow eyes, with our small, small minds, Midas HaDin is a challenge in Parnasa, a health challenge, a challenge in Sar Gidul Banim, a challenge in Shiduchim, that's Midas HaDin, when we're challenged. That's our language. Our Zivug with HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that's a challenge. That's Yemei Shnei Seinu, Bahem Shivim Shana, that's a blink of time, a lifetime in this world. There are bumps, there are challenges in this world. Midas HaDin is the test of Tchias HaMesim. The Midas HaDin is the test of a person succeeding in this world to walk away with a package, with tzchusim, with something that he could take with him for eternity. Atogi bar lo ilam Hashem mechaye meisim atarav lo ishia. We must remember every Shmona Esrei. Tchias HaMesim is with Midas HaDin. Somebody who has chusim, somebody who deserves it, gets up at Tchias HaMesim. And someone who doesn't, will not. Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelek lo ilam haba. We start life with an assumption that we have a chelik in Olam Haba waiting for us. But it's not the same idea regarding Tchias HaMesim. Regarding Tchias HaMesim, the Gemara says that one of Rabbi Yochanan's Talmidim came to him and said that those who have schusim of Torah will get up at Tchias HaMesim. The Tal HaTchia, the dew of life,
is only for those who have schusim in learning. A person who's a tzaddik does mitzvahs all his life, davens with minyan three times a day, doesn't hurt anyone. Is a tzaddik who will go to Olam Haba, but not Tchias HaMeisim. You need Tal Torah. And Rabbi Yochanan said to his Talmud, Lo Nichol L'Mareichu D'Sei Marachi, God doesn't want you to talk that way. What are you saying? A tzaddikim that won't go to Olam Haba if they don't learn? And the Talmud returned and he said, Rebbe, Matzasi Lohem Takona, I found an Eitzah for everyone, Va'atem Advekim, Vashem Alekechem Chayim Kulchem Hayoim. Those who support Torah also have a chelek in Tchias HaMeisim. I have in my neighborhood a wonderful individual who brought his son to my home one evening. His son had just graduated high school. His son did exceedingly well in his learning, and who had just told his father the devastating news that he was not planning to be a doctor, or an accountant for that matter. And he felt that it'll bring him to Rabbi Reisman, who will talk some sense into him. He said, let him go learn in Israel for a year, and then let him go to college, have a parnassah. So I asked the father, did you go to college? He said, yes. What did you major in? He told me. Is your parnasa from your major? I only asked because I knew the answer. He said, oh, by me it was different. God made things work out. I said, that's nice. God can do it again. And his son today is sitting and learning. The father is proud of him. And whenever I meet the father, I tell him, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a gift. You're supporting Loimdei Torah. You're supporting Torah, and you have a chelek in Tal HaTchiyah. We must begin our understanding of our trip in this world with the understanding that this world is a place to have the schus to great joy, great celebration, things to go well in the Olam HaEmes. For things to go smoothly, for eternity. Atogi bar lo elam Hashem, God, you work with midas hadin, mechayei meisim atarav lo ishiya. You mechayei meisim, you help with midas hadin. And that's Olam Hazeh. So, we of smaller mind and narrower focus complain to God when the going is rough. We who can only see that which our senses give us, we see a narrow world. Could this be it? There's a lot of pain in the world. There's a lot of tsar. Few people make it to their 60th birthday without the pain of a nisayon in either health issues, parnasa issues, tsar gidul banim, or shiduchim. Of those four great challenges of Olam Hazeh, there isn't a person who doesn't have disappointments. I'm teaching in the yeshiva Baruch Hashem now for 16 years, and a Rebbe is always curious what his Talmidim remember. And as former Talmidim visit, talk to me, there's one expression that I've used in the classroom that they often come back to me with. I teach boys who are marriageable age. I start the year with a third of the class married. By the end of the year, about two-thirds are married, hopefully. And I always say to them that when you stand under the chuppah and you look at life ahead of you, that's not the way it's going to be. How is it going to be? God only knows. But the way you look at it from under the chuppah, that's not the way it's going to be. And so, they visit, and they say to me, Rebbe, remember, you said that we're under the chuppah, that's not the way it's going to be? Well, it ain't. Because life is a place to be successful in creating schusim for Olam Haba. Life is a place to succeed in lifting weights. If you go and you want to create bulging muscles and lift weights, you won't succeed by lifting light weights. You have to lift weights that are difficult to lift, that are challenging. And your muscles grow. And once you get stronger, you lift even heavier weights. And that is Olam Hazeh. A place where our spiritual growth is measured by our ability to lift weights. And so, human beings try to talk to God. Rabbeinu Shalom, why is this happening? God, why is this happening to me? Rabbeinu Shalom, tell you what, I'll put the cover over my head and just wake me up when Mashiach comes. I'm all ready. And God says, you're not here to be awakened when Mashiach comes. You're here to accomplish until Mashiach comes. When you're challenged, and you find yourself saying, Rabbeinu Shalom, what's going on? It's a challenge. It's a great challenge. But talk to Rabbeinu Shalom's language. God is saying to you, you're being challenged. It's a health issue. It's a parnasa issue. It's our gidul banim issue. The issue with shiduchim. You're being challenged. Someday, the challenge will pass. God says to you, make sure that when you look back at this moment of challenge, that you can say, I dealt with it well. That's God's language. Make sure that when all is said and done, and the Shivim Shana or the Shmainim Shana of a human being's life pass, that you can look back, that you had disappointments. Who didn't? Who didn't? The greatest of our leaders throughout history had every one of these challenges. David HaMelech had a life of one challenge after another. And what did he do? He wrote Tehillim. He spoke God's language. The Kotzka says a great part. There's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says that Nebuchadnezzar, when he achieved his dream of conquering the known world, he was ready to say praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nebuchadnezzar, who recognized the Creator, was ready to praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara says, Bikesh Leganois, he would put to shame the Tehillim of David HaMelech. Uba Malach V'Sotrei Alpiv. And a Malach slapped him on the mouth. And he was quiet. Frek the Kotzker. Why did the Malach slap him? This is a world of free will. Bechira. If Nebuchadnezzar could write a book better than Tehillim, let him do it. Let him write it and let us have it. Kabbalah Ha'emes V'misha Amara, whoever gives us the beauty of praise for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, take it. Why should he be silenced? Emfrit Dekotzka. To say Tehillim, to say songs of praise when things are going well, is easy. A good composer can write beautiful songs of praise. When did David HaMelech write Tehillim? you ever seen the pictures of David HaMelech with a harp, a flowing stream of water, and the sheep grazing peacefully nearby, that is not a picture of David HaMelech. When did David HaMelech write to Tehillim? Bevarchai mipnei Avshalom b'nai. He wrote a praise of God when he was fleeing a son who rebelled against him and threatened to kill him. Bama'ara tefila. He was hiding in a cave, and Shaul was chasing him, entered the cave. When did David write Tehillim? When the world was sunny and peaceful? That's not Tehillim. When the going was rough. Said the Kotzker, God didn't silence Nebuchadnezzar. He said, Nebuchadnezzar, you want to write beautiful Tehillim? All right, we'll give you a slap across the face. Now you can speak. When a person gets slapped, does he feel like praising God? No. Never happened? You walk around in the evening, and the world is wonderful, and then you stub your toe, and suddenly you don't understand? The world is full of pain. So Nebuchadnezzar was given the opportunity. The opportunity is a slap across the face. Now say, sing praise. Nebuchadnezzar spoke the language of human beings. David HaMelech spoke God's language. He spoke the language of being able to sing HaKadosh Baruch Hu's praise at the time that the going was rough. I have a friend who told me of the following incident. A true story, you can't make these things up. There's a man who lives here in New York who lost his wife at a young age. And after the shiva and the year passed, he decided that he would try to remarry. He had a teenage son or a son in his 20s that was dating. He said to him, Abba, how does a person in his 40s go about dating? A 20-year-old, there's a freshness to the world. You date, there's the romance of youth. Abba, how are you going to date? And his father responded as follows. His father said, I thought about that. And I was wondering if I could do it. And then I remembered that Yitzchak was also 40 years old. And how did he find his shidduch? Rivka was walking towards the well, and the water of the well, or of the spring, came up towards her miraculously. And with that, Eliezer knew it was a sign from heaven that this is the shidduch. And this gentleman said to his son, I too am waiting for a sign from Shemayim. It was an evening, and he made his first phone call. Somebody introduced him to a widow with small children, and he was calling her to arrange their first date. They had arranged for the call to be made at, let us say, 8 o'clock, and he called. And this woman picked up the phone, very apologetically. And she says to this man, I have to apologize. I know we arranged that the phone call would be made at this time, but I have an emergency at home. My little children threw some toys down the toilet, and all the water is coming up at me. And I can't talk now. Please call in 2 hours. And she hung up. And this man smiled. All the water is coming up at you. Is your name Rivka by any chance? And he married her. And Baruch Hashem, they live with their integrated families. Now think for a moment about this woman. I presented the story as it truly happened from the man's side of the phone. On the woman's side, I have a widow with young children. I don't know how many shidduch opportunities she has. And an arrangement is made for an 8 o'clock phone call. And at 8:05, she discovers that her children just emptied the Lego box down the toilet and flushed. And the water is just coming up. She says, God, why is this happening now? She complains about the Midas Hadin. And God in heaven is laughing. He's smiling. Because as she's talking to God, why is this happening? Across town, a man is explaining to his son that when the water rushed up towards Rivka, it was a sign from heaven. All of life is that way. All of life is challenges, momentary challenges, temporary challenges. Oh, there may be challenges for decades. But in the face of the eternity of existence, there are flashes of time. We must learn to speak God's language. Every day in davening, we say Psukei Dezimra. The Psukei Dezimra is primarily the last 5 chapters of the book of Tehillim. What we call Ashrei, Til Kael HaNeshama Ta'alel Ka, that is the primary part of Psukei Dezimra, as you know. In the very unlikely event that someone comes late to Shacharis, we skip the other parts and primarily make the Baruch Sha'am HaBracha and say the Halalukas. Now actually, if you open it to Tehillim, you'll discover that Kapitel Kuf Mem Hei does not begin with the words Ashrei Yashvei Veisecha. It begins with the words Tila LeDavid, Arimimcha L'Kai HaMelech. We add Ashrei Yashvei Veisecha as a Hakdam. Why? Rav Schwab, in his excellent, beautiful Pirish on the Siddur, explains the idea of the Halalukas is, of course, a preparation for Shmona Esrei. Shema, Kabbalah Salmach HaShemayim, is a preparation for Shmona Esrei. What about the Halalukas is a preparation? So I'd like to tell you a Nakuda. Tomorrow, when you say the Halalukas, you'll look for it. All of the Halalukas are a preparation for having a sense of God's Hashkacha Pratis. The Hashkacha Pratis of the Rabbi Nishalam, they go in order. The last capital is just one of joy. Next to the last talks about Ruchnias. The first 3 talk about different aspects of living in this world. They're all aspects of preparing for Shmoneh Esrei by seeing yourself as standing before God. And therefore we say, Ashrei Yashvei Veisecha, we start by preparing ourselves to sense that we're standing in front of the Rabbi Nishalaylam, and we talk about the different things the Rabbi Nishalaylam does in this world. Of course, is a pasuk that describes God's kindness to human beings. We mention facts of nature. We talk about Hashkacha Pratis. Ashrei Yoshvei Veisecha, we want to have a sense that we are living, we are sitting in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world. Before you start Shmoneh Esrei, before you begin to talk to the Rabbi Nishalem, you must know his language, the language with which the Rabbi Nishalem relates to us, is a language of Hashkacha Pratis, of watching us. After 9/11, there were people that collected stories of Hashkacha Pratis. They were collecting stories of people who would have been in the Twin Towers were it not for A, learning the Daf Yomi, B, doing someone a favor, C, a missed train, whatever it might be. Stories of Hashkacha Pratis, those who missed the train. Disturbed me greatly, I have to tell you. Because there were many people whose husbands or fathers or children were in the Twin Towers. When you publish stories about God's hand watching people and making sure they miss it, what are you telling those who God caused to be in the building at the time? The truth of the matter is, comfortable or uncomfortable though it may be, is that every one of those people was where he should be based on Hashgacha Pratis. And just as we enjoy relating the story of the fellow who missed being in the Twin Towers at the time, we understand and believe that the fellow who was in the Twin Towers at the time was there by Hashgacha Pratis as well, because he had to be there. God guides a person wherever he needs to be. Olam Hazeh is a world of preparation. It's a hallway. Haskein Atzmecha B'Praizdar. Prepare yourself in the hallway. Prepare yourself in this world for a world of Tchias HaMeisim, a world of Olam Haba, a world of spirituality. There is a lot of pain in this world. There is a lot of difficulty. There's much challenge. The picture we have under the chuppah of life going in the storybook fashion is just that, a storybook. We're here to be challenged and to talk the Rabbeinu Shalom's language, the language of being sent to do something and doing it well. I once heard from Rav Huttner that in his language in Yiddish he said, "An edel gedank darf a grobe moshel." A fine thought needs a coarse example, because we are people of Olam Hazeh. And I once read just the example. Many of you may be old enough to remember a man by the name of Alan Funt. Do you remember something called Candid Camera? For those of you who refuse to admit it, there was a TV show many decades ago, which was, I guess, a true life show. It was an individual named Alan Funt who would arrange different compromising situations where people would come into a situation without knowing that they were being filmed, and their reaction would be filmed, and of course the ones that were funny enough would make it to the weekly television show. So that he would have people in all kinds of situations where, as soon as they realized they were on candid camera, they blushed. Because they reacted in a way that compromised their pride. I remember reading once that there was one candid camera episode which worked all over the country, but not in New York. He set up along the sidewalk a wall with a door. And as people walk down the sidewalk, they had to open the door to keep on going down the sidewalk. And in every city, people would stop and look at it and figure out what it is. But in New York City, when they did it, people would just walk by, open the door, and keep on going, as if nothing happened. New Yorkers are used to anything. Alan Funt once wrote an article, which was printed in the Reader's Digest, which is where I had seen it, as a boy. He flew on an airplane. We're talking now in the 60s, where air travel was not quite as popular as it is today, where people were reluctant to get on airplanes, sometimes made sure their affairs were in order before they got on an airplane. And Alan Funt wrote that he was once on a commercial flight. This was the time of propeller planes. And as they were flying over the Atlantic, one of the propellers failed. And the pilot got on the intercom and announced that one of the two engines had failed, and they had to head him back immediately to the nearest airport, and that everyone should stay calm. On a typical flight where that took place, everyone panicked. Everyone went nuts. Everyone tried to figure out what's going to be. People screamed. But not on this flight. You see, everyone recognized Alan Funt. Everyone was sure that the engine didn't fail. This was all candid camera. And whoever panicked and screamed would be on national television the following week. And therefore, everyone sat calmly, each person in his seat. They said, oh, the engine failed, that's nice. I'm sure we'll make it. The only nervous person on the flight was Alan Funt. Rabbi Isai, we're all on candid camera. We're all here in this world to see how we respond to challenges. We're all here to talk of ruchnius, a language of godliness. We're here to connect to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Why do we daven three times a day? Why every few hours another davening? Why every time we eat, we talk to God? Isn't it enough? We'll do it in the morning and have our day. But no, every step of the way, we're talking to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Rabbeinu Shel Olam, I have a soda. Sha'akel niyeh bedvarai. It's because of you. Every step of the way, we're trained to talk the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's talk. And so, when challenges come our way, the feeling that it shouldn't be this way is incorrect. It should be this way. It's the challenges of Olam Hazeh. It's what makes a person strong. It's what makes a person be zeicha to the ultimate kindness, to the ultimate goodness. It's a way of thinking which is at odds with everything we see in the world around us, which is at odds with the kaychi va'itzem yadi of the world we see, the world we live in. And we pause every few minutes and we say, God, asher yatzar es ha'adam b'chachma, God, by Rami, name is Zainais. We constantly talk to God. We try to talk God's language. And we all have this chus. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu grant us the wisdom to be happy people. May God grant us the frumkeit to be satisfied people. It's frum, it's erlich, to be a happy person, whatever challenge may come your way. If you think the challenges shouldn't be, you'll be miserable. But if you see it as your mission, you see it as your job, you have a goal of coming to the end of the challenge and being able to say, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, I did your will, then Olam Hazeh is wonderful. With all the challenges, with all of the different bumps on the road, it's really, yes, the way it should be. May we all be Zaycha, this wonderful Beis Medrash, the Bialystok Shul. I remember sitting here at times as a young man, as a elementary school boy. You know, elementary school boys get bored during davening sometimes. I've seen it happen to adults too. I remember just looking at the ceiling here, the beautiful ceiling, and thinking, you can't be bored here. First comes to worst, the speaker is boring. You look at the ceiling, so beautiful. You, who are here in the Bialystok Shul, you're used to taking a moment and looking up. Look up all the time. Look to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam. Whatever challenge comes your way, look, see the Rabbeinu Shel Olam's world. And Yitz Hashem, we should all be Zaycha, when this magnificent Beis Medrash will lift itself up and be transported to Yerushalayim Yer HaKadosh. Thank you all for listening.